Good morning. These are the pastors of Berean gathered around the microphone once again. Pastor Sean will be stepping in just a moment. We have an article in front of us today from the Christian Post, and the title is that Josh Harris says that, quote, "I Kissed Dating Goodbye will be discontinued, and he apologizes for flaws." So if the listener is unfamiliar, Josh Harris, back several years ago, about 20, 23 years ago, published a book entitled "I Kissed Dating Goodbye," that he wrote as, the article says, a zealous 20-year-old. And the premise of the book is that he denounces the Western culture of dating and instead proposed a case for biblical courtship. And it was quite the book as far as its popularity in conservative circles, youth ministries, things like that. And so we have an article saying from the 23rd of October that he's now going to discontinue it as soon as the books that have been printed are out already are sold. It will no longer be reprinted. So we have that article we're looking at, but a tag on that article is that actually 2 years ago, August the 26th, 2016, Christian Post reported that the Abstinence author, Pastor Josh Harris, apologizes for telling Christians not to date in I Kiss Dating Goodbye. So we have 2 years ago, this author stepped up and said, "I'm sorry for saying that." And now 2 years later, he is saying once again, "I'm still sorry. I apologize for the errors, and I'm stopping all printing of the book." So the article begins with, "Pastor Josh Harris, author of I Kissed Dating Goodbye, has released a statement apologizing for his best-selling book and announcing that he will be discontinuing his publication. I no longer agree with its central idea that dating should be avoided," Harris wrote in a lengthy message posted on his personal website. "I now think dating can be a healthy part of a person developing relationally and learning the qualities that matter most in a partner. In light of the flaws I now see in I Kissed Dating Goodbye, I think it's best to discontinue its publication as well as other supplemental resources tied to it. This includes the two books I wrote after it whose content is similar," he continued. "My publisher, whose encouragement in this process has been deeply meaningful to me, supports this decision and will not reprint the books after the current copies in their inventory are sold." Written in 1997, when Harris was just 20 years old and had not yet been in a dating relationship, I Kissed Dating Goodbye highlights the problems with contemporary recreational dating and presents biblical courtship as an alternative. "Traditional dating," he says, "is a training ground for divorce because it puts people in the habit of quitting relationships when things get tough." In his book, Harris also urges Christian singles to commit to purposeful singleness, arguing that romantic relationships should exist only as a means to preparing for marriage. The book became a staple among many Christians in the Christian community, earning the praise from the likes of Purity matriarch Elizabeth Elliot and Focus on the Family, selling over 1.2 million copies. In his statement, the 43-year-old Why Church Matters author explained that he began a process of reevaluating the book 2 years ago and shares his evolving perspective on the matter in an upcoming documentary called I Survived, I Kissed Dating Goodbye that will release next year. "I know this apology doesn't change anything for you and it's coming too late, but I want you to hear that I regret any way that my ideas restricted you, hurt you, or gave you a less than biblical view of yourself, your sexuality, your relationships, and God," he said. Last year, Harris gave a TED talk on what he got wrong in the controversial book. "I was young, I was religiously zealous, I was certain, and I was relentlessly ambitious," Harris recalled. "Youth, zeal, certainty, and ambition. They have the tendency to set the world on fire. I was writing to fellow Christians. I was saying we need to be serious about our faith. We won't have sex until we're married. And if we want to avoid premarital sex, we should radically change our lifestyle. And that means we should stop dating." Harris,
"I would agree with all that except the last phrase. I mean, I still think we should be serious about our faith, not have sex until we're married, and avoid premarital sex, which means that for many, you do have a radical change from what the world says.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd love to know what the background is in the... What conversations and things led up to his review 2 years ago of his own book?
Because, I still think maybe I'm disconnected, but, for Christians, I still think that, part of that the mindset in dating shouldn't be just trying to see if you can get your date in bed, which is, very... popular in the secular, with the unsaved.
Yeah, I think that's definitely the primary drive of what contemporary dating relationships look like. At least as you get to the closer to the age of 20, I think the younger dating crowd, the 13, 14 year olds, I think they're more into it for the claiming someone as their own, the someone to love them. The purpose and the identity side of it.
Yeah, but more and more of them are getting into the physical. Much
absolutely.
Earlier.
No, I would agree with that. I'm just saying what's most of the, from my experience, most of the drive or the purpose behind getting into the dating relationships is the I want someone to love me.
The identity of I have a girlfriend, I have a boyfriend.
Yeah. That they're in that category.
But I grew up in Christian circles all my life, and that was more everybody wanted to at least claim they had a boyfriend, girlfriend.
But
what I see in the secular world is it's not just enough to say I have a boyfriend, girlfriend. They want someone to, be intimate with and have sex with.
Would we agree with his statements earlier when we read that? He highlights the problems with contemporary recreational dating, and that traditional dating, he says, is a training ground for divorce.
I would agree with that. How many high school? You've been a soccer coach, you've worked in other ministries. How often do you see they get in the fight gets big enough that they break up, mm-hmm. or the couple guy X, girl Y. Have, they traditionally, they've been together for 3 months, and every other, week, they're breaking up. And it's exactly what it does, is it conditions them that when things get difficult, they're like, okay, well, we fight too much, this isn't going to work. So they choose to step out of the relationship. I personally have never read the book. I was because he said this is 97, so I won't say how old I was in 97.
Were you alive?
I was alive. I was 11.
He just said it.
Well, he went there. So
he was in his
the
first
last
relationship.
Thing, yeah.
Was she cute?
I never dated ugly girls.
Wow.
I can't say the same about them, dating ugly guys. But I intentionally always went up a level. But as a teenager, people suggested this book to me all the time, and I'm like, that's the last thing I want to read. I don't need to even read the premise of it. I've got the title, and that's enough. So,
all right, Harris.
So Harris, now a married father of three, admitted that over the years, a number of individuals have shared how his book negatively affected them and promoted a damaging and unhelpful view of sexuality, relationships, and dating. While there are some good ideas in I Kiss Dating Goodbye, like the fact that you don't have to be in a dating relationship to be a whole person, Harris said his eyes have been opened over the past few years to see some fundamental problems he included in the book. I didn't leave room for the idea that dating could be a healthy way of learning what you're looking for in a long-term relationship. That could be a part of growing personally, he said. I gave the impression that there was one formula that you could follow, and if you followed that, you'd be happily married, God would bless you, and you would have a great sex life and marriage. And obviously, the real world doesn't work that way. That was probably one of the most prominent paragraphs to me, because it was, reading through the article and then also thinking back to everything I was trained that would have completely endorsed this lifestyle. there was no proper training of sex and marriage other than you wait, you wait, you wait, you wait, and then it'll be, then God will bless it.
Okay, so I have read the book.
I have as well, by the way.
I read it in its entirety, and he opened up with that dream sequence. If you remember, Pastor, since you've read it, he opened up that dream sequence where he was getting married, and all of these girls began to stand up and object to him getting married because you said you love me. No, 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 you said you love me. And he started talking about had he given a piece of his heart to each one of them, a heart that had been guided by God to be given to one person for life, the person that he was now marrying. And that kind of is what he jumped on with the premise of it, was come from this thought process, this dream sequence that he had. And he began to dissect in this, and I get what he's saying here in saying that he didn't leave enough room, but in some ways he did, and where the disconnect lies is he said, don't date exclusively, be social grouped. In other words, you can find what you're looking for in a long-term spouse by being in a group of friends where there's a lot of accountability. You go out, but don't be exclusive. This is my boyfriend. This is my girlfriend. This is, we're exclusive to uh-huh. each other in the essence that we don't want anybody else. We're going to go on a date. It's just the two of us and everything else. But I guess what he didn't leave room for was the idea of once you've been this social grouping, and there is that someone that you may be looking for exclusively, do you begin to pair off the number of people in the social grouping to the point where you too can see if you can go have dinner in a public restaurant or something like that and still avoid going to private places where temptation may be too great. He didn't leave that bridging effect in there. It was kind of like all social grouping, now you're getting married, now you're all individual, and it seems like those who bought into the entire social grouping piece struggled to go to the all of a sudden light switch turned, now we're exclusive type of thing. And I know in doing marital counseling with people who have struggled, particularly with intimacy, more times than not, the woman grew up in an environment, a heavy, fundamental Christian environment where she was taught sex is bad, 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 sex is bad. Hey, you're married, enjoy sex. And she's not wired that way. For a long time, it's hard for her to overcome that this is now okay. Now I have two married daughters, one a few weeks ago and one just over a year. So I'm going to talk from the father perspective of it. Is we trying to convey to our daughters, sex is healthy, sex is glorious, sex is enjoyable, but it's holy only in the bounds of marriage, so it's reserved exclusively for that, and you wait exclusively for that. And it was a shock for my first son-in-law, because they were kind of, they had a reserved an apartment, but it wasn't ready for a few weeks. They lived with us for a few weeks after their marriage. So I remember, like, we were getting out to go run some errands or something like that, and they were staying home. And I turned and I looked at them and I said, we'll be back in an hour and a half. Keep a watch on the clock in case you decide to do anything. You know, because that's healthy. It's their relationship. It's what they're, it's what God created each of them for. In that essence, so he struggled with it. He's like, it is. He goes, that is so weird because your father was always like, hey, y'all doing the right thing? You staying separate? You staying holy? You doing everything else? And hey, you know, we're gonna let you ride together, but we need to trust you. You remember this? Just because you're on a college campus away from us doesn't mean that this stops. That because we're not visible, you keep these separations, you keep this holiness, you keep this and everything else. But then, you know, a few days after they're married, I'm all like, hey, we're coming back in an hour and a half. Don't
waste the time.
But also, keep watch, because I'm not going to knock on that door. I'm coming in.
That's your house.
So, you know, she had a bedroom, you know, there's back there in the back. But I think that allows them to be able to embrace that marital intimacy. And I think I see what Josh is saying here is because that middle ground was missing, maybe a lot of people did struggle with making the jump from abstaining, and not even really get to know a person in a more intimate way, but that is still holy. And then it became too much of a jump for them emotionally or psychologically.
I mean, I appreciate his emphasis on waiting because, you know, again, I think the mentality today is, well, you know, you don't know if you'll like him unless you have sex with him a bunch of times.
Yeah, test drive the car.
Right, and I totally disagree with that. So.
Well, and that's also part of my issue with his whole recanting of his book. It's one thing to come out and say, I need to modify my statement to help in that transition period from social to a couple.
It'd be better.
But it almost sounds like when you say, I'm sorry about the book, it sounds like he's saying, I'm sorry I told you to avoid premarital sex.
Yeah, but here's the reality. Maybe he's just a godly man, and maybe he's just amazing, and maybe he's not struggling with any of the things that typically men struggle with. But if you say, I want to tweak a perspective that I have to minorly adjust it, nobody interviews you. Articles aren't written about it. You don't get to write a documentary about making a maturing modification to your perspective. You have to say something like, will be discontinued apologies for flaws. You have to use bold language.
Well, and he's coming out with a new book.
Well, of course.
Which is right on the, coming out right after.
And that was one of the things that, you know, we were kind of talking about before the microphone came on is, okay, 2 years ago he began the book review. Maybe his eyes were open to that point. 2 years later, it's now, again, basically a repeat article of, I'm sorry about my book. Oh, by the way, I have a new one coming out. And I don't know, you know, as far as the article references that he is, you know, a pastor of a church. So if his ministry is doing okay and he is, you know, succeeding as far as doing what he's supposed to be doing as a pastor, and his, I mean, most people in our circles, if you said Josh Harris, and you're like, I don't know who that is. The guy who wrote I Kissed Dating Goodbye. I mean, I don't know that if he is coming out with another book, why can't you just say from the best-selling author of I Kissed Dating Goodbye?
I told you why. Because it doesn't get as much media attention.
And he's caught slack over it because of people that, you know, followed it to the T or followed blindly. And,
or beyond.
And or went beyond what he even said, and now they're...
Well, he says I was young and passionate. He says I was young, I was religiously zealous, I was certain, I was relentlessly ambitious. Well, who isn't?
Right, but even in the last sentence that we read, I gave the impression there's one formula if you follow that. Okay, well, I mean, who's stupid enough to believe that there's one formula to follow?
Right.
And that, you know, if you follow this, if I say these, certain words, then, I'm saved. If I follow this certain thing, then, I'll have, God will bless, I'll have a great sex life and marriage. Okay, but, again, it's not real life.
And let's give him a little bit of a benefit of the doubt on this one, too. The two-year time frame, Brian, that seems to be a significant piece in this. I was talking to another author recently, and he said to me, I have been trying for 10 years to get the rights back to my book from the publisher. Mm-hmm. I've been trying for 10 years and they won't release it because it's still a cornerstone work to the department for which it was written. Glenn Schultz, the guy who visited. And he said, Lifeway still uses it as such an instrumental, colleges still use it to such a degree that I can't get the rights back from it. He goes, so instead of having to go through all the financial burden of trying to write a book that follows on, that incorporates, or being able to get them to even let me do revisions of chapters and things of that nature in my seminars, I just give you the three points that I would love to add to it, but I can't get the rights enough to do this. Or if I got it back, then I could just give it away, offer it more freely to people, things of that nature. So he said what would have to happen is it would have to have a massive decline in its demand for publication. So if Josh Harris was maybe going through the same thing, just trying to give benefit of the doubt here, if he issues an apology and says it's deeply flawed, then the publications drop, now his publisher is willing to work with him to be able to release something else to rectify the situation, and it may have taken a couple of years to get to that point.
Yeah, and that makes complete sense, especially, I mean, it referenced Elizabeth Elliot and Focus on the Family. Yeah. I mean, those are two media giants to the conservative fundamental family.
So,
John, what's your perspective on dating? You have, like, I don't know, just a bunch of kids, man. I mean, they're like,
both genders,
and they're all out of the house, right?
Madison's not. I mean, she's going to college, but
well, that's most people consider that out of the house.
Not married.
Yeah, but
yeah, and Christian's not married yet.
So four are married, two are not.
Right.
All out of the house. Mm-hmm. You're like old.
I am, and I. You know what? I found Josh Harris's book a great foundational resource, and I still agree with the premise, even if he doesn't. And I agree with it. And Steve, you've talked about the premarital sex part. I think that may be dangerous, but I think more dangerous is the idea that he addresses when it comes to this concept that I need to find the perfect person for me. In this idea, it's kind of like we compare it to in our Christianity for people attending church. They want this smorgasbord buffet idea where they intimate the idea that church is for me. I'm not here to serve the church. The church is here to serve me. And he addressed that issue in I Kissed Dating Goodbye. And I think that, sure, there are other perspectives, and there are other probably ways to say it better than a 20-year-old mind could put things together, and you've got your life experience. But I don't know if I would go as far personally as say, you know, I back away from the basic tenet of the book. And talk about other perspectives. I mean, we are so focused on America, and this book was kind of written to address American issues in dating. And so I'm okay with that, too. It's kind of a limited scope. You know, what kids were seeing on the Disney Channel, what kids were seeing in the world needs to have a voice that counters that stuff that's unbiblical.
Right.
And one of the unbiblical ideas is this selfishness idea that dating has along with it, which is, well, as soon as, you know, my BFF this and then she said that, I'm going to drop you and just all that mess. I am still way on board of avoiding that. So we would not allow our children to be involved in that. And we were very serious about the idea that when you're dating or when you're becoming exclusive with somebody, it needs to be moving towards, when you say things like, I love you, that's moving towards marriage. That's not flippant, you know. But then again, I also see a perspective in other parts of the world where the parents still pick these spouses.
Right.
And I don't have a big problem with that. You know, Americans just would go through the roof, and they hate, you know, they write movies about how terrible that is. But the reality is there are things that 45-year-old parents can guide their children through as pitfalls by picking their spouse that a 20-year-old just, you know, all gaga and in love is going to miss. And we've seen this over and over. However, on the flip side, there are terrible stories in other parts of the world, too. You know, Muslim families that, you know, oppress women and all the things we hear about nowadays where they're forced to marry at 13, these 50-year-olds and stuff. So you can go off the rails in any situation. And what I think is the most important thing is we've got to stop thinking, I'm here to have a perfect life. That's what we've really got to combat. Because the idea is, really, we're here to glorify God with whatever happens in our life. I was singing this morning when I woke up that song. I think it's maybe Casting Crowns, We Were Made to Thrive. Mm-hmm. And I always tag on there, except for the people who are starving in Africa, you know, because the reality is that's our mentality is we were made to thrive. You know, God created me so I can have this thriving life. You know what? There are people in the world who live 24 hours. There's the children that live 6 months and they don't have anything to eat and they die. What do you do with that?
They were made to thrive. They have to be. The song says so.
So, you know, I am still, you know, some of what he said is just still so important to say.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Jonathan, you said something that...
There's some red flags in this article that I don't really like, for him personally. And I don't know. I don't know the background of what... But this right here, where it says, fear is never a good motive, he said. Fear of messing up, fear of getting your heart broken. No, fear is a good motive. Yeah, fear of hell is a good motive. Fear of getting caught is a good motive. Fear of that hot stove is a good motive. It's all context. You can't just make a blanket statement like that. And I'm just wondering if, like, the changing world we're living in, and then the next page he says, it wasn't until I stepped down from being a pastor and went to graduate school until I understood the problems presented in this book. I stopped having to be consistently right about everything. And I understand that. I just became a student who was listening. But, you know, I've seen this over and over. You get into this academia, this scholarly world, and you begin to doubt just basic fundamental things that shouldn't be doubted.
He's probably 40, right?
He's 43 now.
43, right. So it'd be very interesting for those of you that are, Brian, your age, to pay attention to where he's at in his 70s.
Mm-hmm.
Theologically, John.
Yeah.
Because we're seeing a potential movement here in a direction that may not be helpful. Because is the next book going to talk about, well, I was too dogmatic about one man and one woman, and I need to walk that dog back? Is that what the next... Because this is...
I don't know what's going on.
No, nobody knows. I'm not suggesting that. I'm not trying to impugn his character in any way. But we've all seen this slippery slope. We've seen it with theologians on a regular basis.
Well, the other article that was issued 2 years ago says that he's the pastor, or he was the pastor, of Covenant Life Church, a founding church of Sovereign Grace Ministries in Gatlinburg.
Yeah, that's C.J. Mahaney's church.
Yeah.
C.J. Mahaney started that church, and then he handed it over to the
So, doctor. I mean, that gives us a fairly good idea, at least on where he was theologically, which would be very close to us.
Yeah, it was.
That one, it says he called the book a huge mistake.
What's that?
Josh Harris, in that art, in this, in the second
the old
article.
The 2-year-old article.
Right. In 19, he called, when he was in an interview, he called his book a huge mistake. And he said, part of the reason this has been so hard for me is that my identity is tied up in these books. It's what I'm known for. And then he said, it's like, well, crap, it's the biggest thing I've done in my life, this really huge mistake. He stepped down from the church to pursue graduate studies at Regent College in British Columbia.
Right. Was it really a mistake, though? That's really the... I mean...
Yeah, I think that's a little oversold, but...
Yeah.
Well, especially...
I mean, who agrees with what you said when you were 20? I don't agree with everything I said when I was 20. It's just part of life, man. You realize...
But we don't know about the number of people who read the book, got really serious about courtship, married somebody, they now have 4 kids, and they have a wonderful relationship, healthy intimacy. They're not the ones that contact him.
Yeah.
Right. It's this one right here. You know, add me to the list. I'm 37, never been married, now infertile. I'm sorry. That's not Josh Harris' fault.
Wait. You missed a part of that. Set bar too high cause of your book.
Right.
I mean,
which is actually the opposite of his premise, by the way, if you read the book with any intelligence. But whatever.
But see, like, even the next pair, the book marketed to teenagers, 20, discourages teen relationships, promotes courtship, a process in which a couple moves purposefully towards marriage with their parents' blessings, involvement as a better alternative to dating. Any kind of physical intimacy before marriage, the book argues, is a violation of the sacredness of married sexuality and could lead to lifelong regret. Okay, I think we would agree with that.
Yeah.
You know, it's almost like they're bashing that.
Yeah, that's kind of my... I feel like there's a whole lot of throwing the baby out with the bathwater in his renouncement of his work. Because it's... I mean, I agree with you, Pastor, 100%, that it's not as, you know... I feel like if Bill Stern were here, he'd say, it's not as sexy or as appealing for you to just say, you know what, I should have qualified that statement like this, let's move on with life. It's got to be, nope, I was way off, I was young, dumb, and out of control, shame on the publisher for letting my, you know, 20-something
mind go. Just think about how iPhone moves from one thing to another. How does iPhone, man, you've got to say that thing was terrible in order to make this thing great. I mean, that's, yeah. that, I mean, it,
Yeah, my unsanctified imagination ran to there. He's just, this is a good way to reinvent yourself after a few years of not being able to get something published.
That's exactly where I went on Facebook when it was posted on Facebook a couple days ago.
But certainly that's cynical. So
yes, it's cynical. But
take that with a grain of salt. But that's
yeah. And the older you live, sometimes, John, the more cynical you become because of the degree to which you see it. Yeah. Who's heard about Josh Harris in the last 5 years or 10 years? Nobody, because he went off to be a seminary student. So how do you reinvent yourself, and how do you get your new book selling? Because you're probably broke by now as a seminary student.
And the other part, the other scenario that I could imagine, because I've seen this a whole bunch of times, is as soon as you have your own kids and those kids become like 15, 16, and whatever, I don't know how old his children are, but when that little girl says, "Daddy," suddenly everything you know, like it happened in my house. Contemporary Christian music was terrible, terrible, terrible until my younger sister liked it, and then suddenly it was the greatest thing ever. So I saw my own dad change his views on that just because, you know, his baby.
Well, he's
girl.
Probably there. I mean, it's 23 years ago, you know, 24 years ago now, because he's 43. He wrote it when he was 20.
You're 30, and you have kids, yeah. So
yeah.
Fast forward, yours would be teenagers.
In 10 years, Michael will be 13, almost 14.
Yeah, it's really, you know, a lot of people talk the talk until they're really in the situation themselves, and then.
And the whole idea of I Kiss Dating Goodbye, you know, the premise behind it, it's not something that you personally can do. And what I mean by, individually, what I mean by that is we have several single ladies in this church who really want to be married, and they want to enter into a courtship with somebody, and they want that man that they enter into a courtship with to marry them. And then that man says, "No, I'm not going to marry you. I'm not interested in you." And so they start again. And then they start again. And it looks like they're doing exactly opposite of what Josh is saying, but their objective is not to be in a dating relationship. But they can't. It takes that person to say, "Yes, I'll marry you." Like, how do you know when you enter into this courtship that the person will marry you?
And I guess that could be also a kind of fundamental warning. Don't take a book, like the idea, and then just immediately base your whole life around it. Because
the Bible.
Right, of course. I didn't say the book. I said don't take a book.
Right,
an indefinite article.
Yes. But we're so used to doing this, you know, we grab a book, something like Restless and Reformed or something, and it just changes our way of thinking, and so then we just go overboard.
Right, radical.
Yeah, and so obviously, I mean, when you read a book, you need to read it with some mindfulness to the fact that this is shaping my thinking, but there are other viewpoints that I need to keep in
mind. So you're talking about being discerning.
Right, that's the best word for it.
Yeah, which is something that we're struggling with today. Yeah. We're struggling with discernment. We're struggling with the ability to read between the lines and seek to know whether this has a degree of truth in that's worthy of emulation. But we just seem to be like whole hog, and it's unfortunate.
Yeah, and I think that we live in a culture, too, that wants someone just to tell us everything that's, you know, just get it all right for us, and we'll just follow that. So just release your book, and we'll just do everything that's in the book, and then I won't have to think about it.
And then we'll blame you if it doesn't work out.
Right.
And I don't know who's saying sex is bad, sex is bad, sex is bad, sex is bad. I think we're saying wait.
Our ministry? Well, Our ministry would say...
I'm talking to some BBA alumni, not recent, not in the last 10 or 15 years. These people are well in their 30s, pushing their 40s, but they're people that I was ministering to when they were singles, when I first got here. And a lot of them struggled going into their marriages, and I don't think it was because it was anything being taught. It was what was being taught and how it was being conveyed in the home.
What do you say to our ministry? What are we talking about?
Well, I would say our ministry, you know, the pastors in this room, we would communicate wait, but I would definitely think that there are still conservative ministries out there that are saying sex is bad, that's their way
I think that's how the individual is interpreting it. I think what's being
preached is sex before marriage is bad.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, and so they're preaching against fornication and saying sex before marriage is bad, but what the listener hears is sex is bad. Mm-hmm. You know, they lose the before marriage
discernment
part.
Peace.
Yeah, you know, because they're not discerning.
So to what degree, and just, you know, because I would agree, to what degree then is there the lack of communication about holy, biblical, honorable sex adding to the perception of sex as bad? Because the only sex that is discussed is no sex before marriage. No sex before marriage.
I don't think you're right. I think 2 years ago, yeah, we were very upfront with some of the students.
But that's a relative new thing.
Okay.
In the history of the whole.
Okay.
Within the independent movement.
But Brian particularly said our ministry.
No, our ministry.
Said in our ministry, we would say wait till you're married.
No, our ministry, we would tell them it needs to be preserved for marriage. We would not tell them that it's bad. We would not tell them, you know, we would be more cautious and qualitative in our statements. But I'm saying the conservative fundamentalism, as a broader brush, I would say, is more of the sex before marriage is bad, and they don't talk about sex at all inside of marriage on what it's supposed to be. And so it adds to the perception that this is something we don't discuss. So it's bad.
And one of the things I think that's contributed to that is because we have tried to do two things. And the two things we've tried to do is stay holy according to our Bible and adopt the world standards of you need a master's degree before you get married.
Yeah. I think the biggest obstacle when it comes to sexuality is waiting. That is probably the largest obstacle. I mean, the thing people struggle with the most. So I'm not exactly sure what you want us to describe. I mean, do you want to describe how to do it? I mean, do you want to
I'm not discontent with our ministry.
Right, I'm not attacking you. I'm trying to get to what do you want us to preach about. Because I think the biggest obstacle or the biggest warning in the scripture is don't have sex before you're married and don't have sex with somebody who's not your wife. Okay? So beyond that, there are probably some things when it comes to that we can preach about when it comes to couples and expectation, those kind of things. But I'm not sure what you can preach to teenagers except for wait.
It's going to be amazing. It's going to be glorious, but you can't do it.
Right. That seems pretty difficult.
I'm not discontent with where our ministry is on how we approach the topic. I'm saying outside of 517, 518 Glensford, the other ministries that we might rub shoulders with, I think those entities would do well to let's address it a little more carefully and biblically.
And right. So, and I think the challenge is what Pastor just said. You know, if you say, oh, it's wonderful, it's great, it's the most awesome thing in the world, but you can't have it, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's like, you know...
It's the best steak I've ever had, but you should never go there and buy one.
Right.
Or, you know, this is the best chocolate chip cookie ever, it just came out of the oven, smell it, you know, blah, blah, whatever, but, you know, you can't eat it.
Right.
Okay, I mean, that's hard to tell a teenager. I mean, it's hard to throw that in front of a teenager.
Yeah, especially in light of the idea that we want you to have your master's degree before you get married.
Right, so, and I would agree that we're probably not very thoughtful about how we plan to talk about this or whatever in evangelical circles and maybe even at our church. For example, I think, you know, one of the things that we don't want to talk about is that probably every boy in your youth group has seen pornography that is more visually explicit than anything you can stand up and say.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't need to tell them that. What you need to tell them is, what you're seeing in that is unrealistic. You ain't getting that. So forget it. Change your thinking. Those kind of things, just like you're talking
about. Sounds like Gad. Mm-hmm.
So you're saying the same thing. Going to college, waiting 4 years, is unrealistic. So stop thinking that way. Try to find a different way. You know, maybe we should encourage married couples to go to college. You know, It's going to be difficult. We understand that. But it's probably more glorifying to God than like the college campuses with the beer and the debauchery and all of that stuff. Or the flip side, you know, perhaps, I'm not even willing to go there, but perhaps where, you know, the real conservative colleges and people say, oh, I was messed up because I went to a really conservative college. I'm not buying that one either, but...
I went to a real conservative one. I don't think I'm that messed
up. Me either. You know, and the reality is the people that said that went to my college, they just... You know, they just didn't want to get along with the rules. That was the basic idea.
Well, the people that are on there whining about the college they went to and how it impacted them are the loudest, squeaky voices. The ones that were successful, they don't have time to be on there whining about their college. Mm-hmm. They're out there making a difference in the world. You know, you got to stop blaming everything else on
your own. It's very much the modern mentality that I'm a result of my circumstances, that I had nothing to do with who I am or what I have become.
Right. If your sex life stinks, fix it. Stop blaming Josh Harris and fix it.
Well, and you know, the reality is I would think that probably most of the people on there complaining, I went to a Christian school, it ruined my life, you probably wouldn't put them in the category of just crazy about God, holy, read their Bible, you know, just, and then they're saying that stuff.
Right, which is why I was very concerned with the statement, I was religiously zealous.
Right.
You're not anymore?
Yeah.
Mm. You're not zealous anymore? Because I need you to be.
Yeah.
I need you to be. We don't need any more seminary graduates that are moderate, apathetic. I need that. That changes the world right there.
And zealous is a great word. I love zealous. Passionate's a bad word. Zealous is the Bible word. Passionate is... lust that you go after yourself, but zealous is going after God's truth.
Yeah, they identify Jesus, the zeal that Jesus had when he's in the temple, you know.
Yep.
Is there anything else worth talking about with this?
Not so much in the article, but on the conversation topic, since we're, you know, discussing it, what the guys, especially, you know, several of you have older daughters, you've got one, you know, on the almost to being married, you've got several that are married, Jackie, your daughter's been married. What should we, as Christians, as biblically literate followers of Christ, be pushing and promoting for, quote-unquote, dating relationships?
Okay, so here's how I addressed it with my daughters, and they are nowhere near perfect, and we all know that. One was the purpose of intimacy. There's a multifaceted purpose to it. Procreation, obvious. The other two, it is designed to be joyous so that you have a special connection with your husband. It is something that even God has recognized through, Paul recognized through the inspiration of the Holy Spirit, that it's not to be abstained from because it's the devil's playground. It's a place in which the devil can come in. And that sexual temptations are so absolutely strong that every time you see somebody with a sexual sin temptation surviving that temptation, they accomplished it through one way. They didn't fight the temptation. They fled from, they ran from the temptation. There was a fleeing process to it. Pragmatically, to put them to understand it, you would never go get in the driveway, turn on the car engine, and not take it for a drive, so don't get in the car. Don't start the engine. Don't put yourself in a position where the engine's going to be started. But with that being said, we do have to recognize that this is something that's special. God has designed for man and woman to be one flesh, one emotionally, one within the connection of God. It is absolutely magnificently glorious, but only in marriage and only between you two for as long as you live. And there is a mutual acceptance in this, and the marriage bed is undefiled, and you two will have to decide what that means and the boundaries of your relationship so that you both have mutual satisfaction.
You happy with that answer, Brian?
Yeah.
And it's not graphic. It's not... You know what I mean? It's I'm just trying to fulfill that purpose in them.
All right, so I would agree with everything you said. All right, But I don't get to have those conversations with the students in my ministry. Okay, because that's a mom and a dad role.
Okay, what I do say, and I said it to the junior class just a few weeks ago, or actually maybe a few days ago, is we were talking about it, and of course you have the idea of the reputation of Mary, you know, here she is, virgin, conceiving, everything else, and we're talking about the life of Christ, you know, worldly perceptions, things of that nature. And I said, the Bible's real clear, guys. Intimacy for marriage is a glorious thing. And God designed it to be a glorious thing to be enjoyed, but it starts when you're married. Up until that point, you have to avoid that temptation lest you corrupt something that God has designed. And in Proverbs 31, it says, ladies, listen to me. In Proverbs 31, it says that she did her husband right all the days of her life. That means that you don't know who your husband is now, so do him right by resisting the pressure that boys may put on you to corrupt what will be your husband's gift later in life. And boys, we are designed to be the women's protectors. We're designed to be the leaders. We're designed to be spiritual guides. We're designed to protect, to look after them. So I need you to step up and be knights and not dogs. And you need to protect these young ladies even from yourself and your own base temptations that Satan would use against you, because you would not want someone to corrupt your future gift. Don't corrupt someone else's, because you don't know until you're married. And well, I said that to the junior class.
I guess I would understand the context of what you're saying, Brian, with 7th graders being in there, but if you had a 11th and 12th grade entity, I mean, let's face it, as John said earlier, you're not telling them about something they don't know about.
Yeah.
And you're not telling them about something that they haven't already seen.
And I'm in mixed company, and it's an academic setting. They're not my children, so there was no graphic nature to what I just said.
No, and I understand that, and I'm always cautious, and it's funny because you guys know my youth workers, and some of them will sit in the back and not laugh at what I said, but laugh at watching me struggle with making sure I speak appropriately, knowing that any words that come out of my mouth could be a text or a phone call from a parent in an hour. And so they've, you know, messed with me before about it. It was very entertaining watching you, you know, speak appropriately about a sensitive topic. But I think we've discussed the intimacy side of things. But what leads to the struggle of wanting to go, you know, take the car for the test drive is this culture that we have of the dating relationship. So aside from the intimacy side, what are your guys' thoughts on the teenage, the labeling of dating relationships, the what is and isn't allowed? Because I think we've discussed this book enough. I think we've discussed the intimacy side enough. But listeners and parents are like, okay, so you told me this is wrong. What should it look like from my student?
Okay, and here's where I'm going to side with Josh in his premise of he's now kissing, dating goodbye kind of aspect. In the essence of, I don't disagree with any of the premise that we could be training ourselves for unhealthy relationships and a jump ship mentality. I'm not disagreeing with that at all or anything else. But here's the fact of the matter. Most teenagers today aren't looking to date. We no longer have a dating-driven mindset in the current teenager. Throughout our entire high school, and throughout the public schools, and all the other Christian schools around us, throughout our entire society, we have to wake up and recognize the fact our children aren't talking about dating anymore. They're talking about hooking up.
Yeah.
We have a hook-up society, and you don't have to date for that. That's how we get movies with titles like Friends with Benefits. Let's just be friends with benefits. We're not dating. He's just my friend. And they're having sex with their friend. And if you ask parent, is that your boyfriend? No, we're just friends. But in private, we're just friends hooking up. And that's the reality of it. We no longer have to be in a dating relationship to have sex, because we've degraded even the aspect of sex within the realm of perceived love.
Mm-hmm.
To there has to be no love involved. What's love got to do with it? Thank you, Tina Turner.
That's really well said. I mean, I mean, we're struggling with getting people married. We're struggling with people getting them dating. We have guys in our congregation that would rather stay home and play videos than take a girl to a movie. We have guys in our congregation would rather go to the gym a second time in the day than risk having a conversation with a girl, only to find out that she's more intelligent than he is, or that she's more articulate, or that she's more passionate, or that she's more thoughtful. So it's a lot easier just to go to the gym, push some weights up and down. I mean, we're really struggling with getting men to embrace dating. Fear of rejection is giant in the lives of so many of these men who have so little self-confidence. You have ladies out there that are ready to be married, that want to provide sex for that man. They want to be intimate, and yet we can't get them to date.
And then we do have, in fairness, we do have some of the ladies who, like this one, I really struggle with the way she blamed Josh Harris for her lack of never being married, now infertile, set the bar too high because of you. No, you set the bar too high because of you, lady. It was you who set that bar. Josh didn't set that bar. You set that bar. And I see girls, young ladies, young women, pushing 30 years old in our ministry now, who have come and have been talking to me and others and my wife and others, and it's like they've set the bar so stinking high that every man they try to date feels the pressure to live up to this enormous expectation. And I know I'm going to fail at that, so I'm just going to go ahead and devote myself to work. I'm going to go ahead and devote myself to the gym. I'm going to go ahead and drop you and maybe find somebody who has a more realistic expectation.
Well, Jesus isn't available to date. Right. He's not available.
And you know, I'm thinking of, you know, one of our...
There's lots. It's not just that. And they're at different ages in their life. And so there is a necessity to date. I mean, you can't get away from it. There's a necessity to do something. I mean, was Beth your very first girlfriend? Serious girlfriend? Did you have anything in high school? Any interest? You never looked?
There was two girls that I liked in high school. One I really liked, and then they moved away. Actually, when I went to college, we were writing back and forth, and then she sent me a Dear John letter, you know, we can't make this happen, you're too far away, and
got
whatever.
John Deere letter.
Which really, that was hard, because I really, really did like her a lot. The other girl I liked in high school, not so much. It was just more kind of the pressure of, you know, she really likes you, and everybody has a girlfriend, and, you know, why don't you know, ask her to be your girlfriend? So, you know, I did, and then my dad found out, and he was like, that's not going to work, and then we snuck around behind his back, and then he found out, and then I got...
Then it really didn't work.
Yeah, then it really didn't work. So, that was kind of...
But we don't have a scenario in our high school where everyone's in a relationship.
That was bad.
Mm-hmm. No.
But the other girl, yes, college, I think I had... One or two dates before I met Beth, and then when I met Beth, well, I knew the night that I met her, I was walking back to the dorm with my roommate, and I said, I'm going to marry her one day, and he was like, he thought it was a big joke, and I said, no, I said I totally have
peace. Got a word from the Lord.
Well, I totally had peace that she was to be my wife, and I can't explain it other than the Lord or the Holy Spirit or whatever. Yeah. And, you know, there have been many times since then that I've, you know, in times of struggle in your marriage, you go back to that and say, you know, I know God brought us together. And I had peace. So
let's move forward 17 years. What counsel did you provide to your daughters as they started liking guys in their teenage years? Guidelines
that? And my guidelines when my girls were, you know, junior high school, they could date, if you want to use that word, in groups, you know, and we tried to, it was in, you know, a youth activity, it was a school activity, it was a class activity. When they got up more senior high, it was, hey, you know, 10 of us are going to go to the restaurant after the ball game, okay, you know, is there going to be a parent with you, what vehicles are you going in? You know, you're not, you know, it's going to be a group of girls in a car, a group of guys in a car. Yes, you can meet at such a restaurant, but, you know, you all better stay together as a group. You know, who's going to bring you home, or am I going to come pick you up? Even at the spring banquet, Mm-hmm. It was, you know, we'll take you and you can meet whoever there, but, you know, we'll come pick you up again. You know, you're not going to be, you know, ride with them, period. You know, that's not happening. Now that, you know, my oldest is 22, you know, I don't have that same, you know, if her boyfriend comes and picks her up, you know, where are you going? What are you going to do? You know, obviously it's, you know, you know, we still are involved as far as, you know, we're going to go eat here and then we're going to go watch a movie. Okay. You know, what time are you going to be home?
Mm-hmm.
Just to be informed and to track it. But, you know, we are, I'm a little
more. What about with technology?
As far as.
Because, well, I mean, just use of and interaction with, because, you know, as far as thinking about my specific ministry, the DMs or the direct messages of any particular social media platform. You've got the picture happy Instagram society, the picture happy Snapchat society, which are the two most prominent social media platforms for teenagers right now. And with Snapchat, there's absolutely no accountability because it deletes it after they look at it for 10 seconds. Regardless of whether it's text, image, or video, it just disappears into Snapchat servers.
Right.
So, I mean, obviously that your girls didn't deal with that, but I still
not,
think there'd be
till,
principles of, yeah. of wisdom for technology use and things like that.
I mean, my youngest never, I mean, she didn't do social media really in high school. She just, and still to this day, she doesn't have Facebook. She just couldn't care less. I mean, she'll have an Instagram post every now and then and a, something else, I think she does. I don't think it's Snapchat, but something else.
Twitter, maybe?
She doesn't have time for it. She doesn't have time for it.
Right, it's not Twitter. It's it's something with pictures, but I don't remember what it's called.
My youngest, we had to go to unlimited data because of her. Because of the amount of Snapchat, social media stuff, especially when she got into college, because she was a social media officer for her organization or sorority. Things of that nature, which cost massive data use. But she was into social media a lot. And Brian, the one thing that Bianca had to do is she had to actually, I had to be a friend, I had to be a follower. And with Snapchat, you're right. There was nothing I could do to follow that, because if she sends it if she'd have sent a picture to Alex, I'd have never known. Or anybody else for that matter. But the one thing that I did was, is I was aware of what Snapchat was, but why it was founded.
Mm-hmm.
It was founded as this very anonymous background type of thing where you could send a nude to somebody and it disappears. So it's not like on your phone, it's not on their phone. Somebody's not going to pick your phone up, discover it. You know, now you got this embarrassing thing. But what I impressed upon them is you could do this and you could get by with it. As far as I'm concerned, but God's still going
right.
to know.
Yeah.
And you've got to recognize that. You're accountable to God. There's an integrity thing that I've got to trust you with in this aspect, especially since they were young adults.
Right.
Then the other aspect was, I said, but don't you also be aware of something? You don't own the rights to that picture you may send. The guys who founded it, the owners of Snapchat, own every picture that's ever sent through Snapchat.
Mm.
And they have the right to sell them. So, and that's why they did it. It was, they actually made their first initial amounts of money to keep supporting the application when all these college girls began sending nudes of themselves to other dudes, and they were selling them off to magazines and websites.
Wow. Well, for
evil.
Yeah, and both my girls knew, you know, that, you know, they were on the, you know, you could screenshot it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whatever, it's, yeah, okay, so it disappears, but they can screenshot in that 10
and
seconds.
Even if it does tell you, I mean, it does tell you if so-and-so, like, did screenshot.
What he's saying is the guy could screenshot it and save it and show his buddies.
Yeah.
And,
yeah, and do whatever they want to with it. So, I mean, you know, there was still that fear.
Definitely a fear.
Of, you know, it's going to, you know, and then just re-emphasizing, be sure your sin will find you out.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just the fear of parenting in and of itself, is you pray, you raised them well
right.
enough.
Well, but...
recognizing what little sinners they still are.
Yeah, but that's, you know, but with both my girls, you know, that for all practical purposes, I mean, they're not under my rule anymore.
Yeah.
Right.
But, you know, what I taught them from way early on was, you know, what my dad taught me. You remember who you are and what you are.
You know, you said that to me, Steve, one time about your dad saying that to you, and I used it quite often with my own girls.
Right. And Lauren still talks about that. You know, I remember if you always said, you know, and you're a Christian, you're a Wilson, you're a Christian, you're a Wilson. Just that.
Well, I was trying to look for it. I have a mess. I reached out to a former Berean family that was very involved in our ministry, of a mom that had sent her teenage daughter to prom and entering into a dating relationship. And one of the most wise mom and dads when it comes to interacting with their kids. And so I reached out to her about, you know, what was your thought process on sending your daughter to prom? I know you guys didn't make this decision lightly. And one of the things that she mentioned that I think will stick with me for quite a while was the fact that she trained her children, specifically her daughter, that they allowed to go to prom, to handle the unseen and the heart issues, so that the physical, visible issues would take care of themselves. Because the heart was trained, because the heart was taught what was right, what was appropriate, that it would move in the leading of the Holy Spirit, rather than, here, you meet all my exterior physical requirements and I'll just completely ignore what's going on inside of you. Rather than, let me train how you're supposed to respond and deal with these situations, then no matter what the exterior is, you'll be able to act appropriately. And I just thought that was super wise.
And I will go even one little step further. If your child makes a mistake, if your child sins, and they violate the boundaries and the protections that you put, there is a loving restoration that has to take place. But in that loving restoration, there are some hard steps that have to go into play. One is, you can't drive a car if there's no fuel in it. Going back to the car analogy, in that instance, it was a cut all fuel supply, starving, deal with the fits, deal with the Hades on Earth,
mm-hmm.
kind of effect, where, you know, even Disney, in all of its romantic idealism of the princesses and the Prince Charming swooping in to rescue you from the prison, maybe not something that the child needs to be watching in a time of restoration, until such time as that heart can be retrained to be responsible with romantic emotional feelings.
Yeah.
And there's almost a complete starvation effect to that. And much like an alcoholic would detox, you may have some dark days ahead of you, parent, if you're out there trying to lovingly restore your child to get them back into this biblical mindset. And I envy you. I don't envy you. I pray for you. I don't even know you, but I'm praying for you, because it's difficult.
All right. Well, that's our podcast. Thanks for tuning in. If you have a comment or a suggestion, feel free to contact us, posting below, or you can email Brian at bhowell.bbc@gmail.com. Thanks. Have a great day.